The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You took the seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love the air.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Tuesday, July 17th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here on National Cannabis Radio for the next 2 hours of the most intelligent and informative discussions on marijuana and drug law reform anywhere on the internet. Thanks for being here. We're always available at ncr420.com on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Let's get to the fun today. We've got our regular studio crew here joining us over here in the engineer's deck. We've got Ganja John hanging out.
Russ, don't say we're intelligent. I'll keep it nice and retarded for these people.
Ganja John's here to balance out the curve.
Yeah, I'm getting it stupid, baby.
Also over here at our co-host deck, we've got Wiz Calico hanging out. Hi, Calico.
Aloha. How are you today, sir?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the guests we've got coming over. I got to give major kudos to our producer here, Wiz Calico, for landing a big fish on Monday's show. You break the news.
Yeah, we're very excited to have presidential candidate Jill Stein, of course, from the Green Party on next Monday at 3:30. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And that's actually going to be the day before President Barack Obama comes here to Portland, and we're planning a big protest there between NCC and NCR. So we're looking forward to that next week.
It's going
to
be very fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, and we also will have Steve D'Angelo on the show on Friday, obviously. Harborside has been in the news lately with U.S. Attorney Melinda Hagg, so he'll be on to talk about that on Friday. We're stoked on it.
All right, so looking forward to that. Friday, Steve D'Angelo. On Monday, we've got Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein. Thursday, Peter Crist from LEAP is going to join us for Cops Say Legalized Drugs. And tomorrow, of course, we get Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A segment. Also, let's not forget, sitting in our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is our news director, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hello. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you. Nice to have you here. What do we have in our headlines today?
We've got a couple headlines today. We're going to talk about the fate of that medical marijuana initiative in Arkansas. We're also going to talk about an Evanston councilwoman from Wyoming that's gotten into a little trouble. She was in court today. We're also going to talk about that interesting case in Ohio about a drug king that was arrested. And if we can get to it, we're also going to answer to Gil Krulikowski, who had an answer for those petitioners about PTSD.
All right. We will get to that. Also coming up on the show today, we've got our Daily Toker Tunes. It's Electric Tuesday. And I found some great funky kind of remix music, great dance music from CI with the Soul Hitman, the Funk Hunters remix is coming up at 20 after for you to get your groove on. And then for half past today, we are going to do an extended activist agenda. You know, last week I was in Ohio for the first time, Southern Ohio, near the West Virginia border at the Wisteria Campground at an event called Starwood 32 by the Association for Consciousness Exploration. And I delivered three presentations there. We're going to bring you video from one of them, just part of my presentation. conversation, and I'm not sure which one it is. I think it's the history of marijuana in America, and we'll cover a lot of the colonial history of hemp and marijuana in America. So that's coming up at 5:30. Stick around for that. You can always find us on Twitter, at Radical Russ is me, at Wiz Calico is Calico, at Ganja John, at Cannabis Carry. We're all over the Twitter. Also, follow our show Twitter at RBShow420, and NCR420, of course, is National Cannabis Radio. We're also all over Facebook, same addresses. Just check it out, facebook.com. And make sure you like us, because we really need your approval. We crave it. We're right back after this. Stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show.
The voice of the marijuana nation. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Help us legalize it. Text NCC to 420-420 and send $10 to the National Cannabis Coalition. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Teenager in Ohio has been moonlighting as a multi-million-dollar drug ringleader, according to authorities. The 17-year-old male turned himself in this morning to Warren County, Ohio officials. We do not know his name because the young man has just recently turned 17, and his alleged crimes occurred when he was 16 years old and just a minor, so he will be charged in juvenile court. The entrepreneur teen is accused of selling high-grade marijuana to his classmates to the tune of about $20,000 a month. His prices were in the $350 to $450 an ounce range. The teen had orchestrated three separate grow houses where police found over 600 marijuana plants. At the time of his arrest, the teen had more than $6,000 in cash just in his bedroom. According to Warren County Prosecutor David Fornshell, the teen drug kingpin supplied most of the marijuana to Mason, Ohio schools and other schools in the King School District and another suburban school district near Cincinnati. John Burke from the Warren County Drug Task Force says that if you were a student in the area, there is a huge chance if you were buying your marijuana, it was from him. The teenager is described as a typical boy boy next door kid who loves to skateboard. They estimate that he had been operating the large drug organization since at least he was 15 years old. Six separate adults also associated with the growing operations have been charged for helping grow and distribute the marijuana in connection to this case.
Wow. And to me, it sounds like kid was pretty smart, too, because he realized what the age limit for juvenile prosecutions was and got himself turned in
if I'm going to get caught,
you're going to put me in juvie.
Well, if I've made this much money, I better go and get myself caught.
Yeah, exactly. And the scary thing about this is, you know, when you get this continuing criminal operation going like this, where they can show more than 60,000 plants being produced or more than $20 million made in any particular year, you're eligible for a federal death penalty at the adult level. Yeah. So,
and I think this kid too, like, if he's this intelligent, I think he knew, you know, he may have gotten scared. It got too big.
Yeah.
And he knew what was going to happen.
So. Yeah. And maybe, you know, he's got enough money made and stashed away and laundered somehow that he has some time to make it, right?
Click yeah. On.
Oh, sorry, Matt.
I was going to say, I sure hope so. If I'm you're sure making $20,000 a month at 17 years old, good Lord. Finance my college education, please.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money.
What an amazing story. But you know, you never hear of teenage beer kingpins or teenage liquor kingpins or teenage cigarette kingpins. Really, never really happens here. I wonder why that is.
And a city councilwoman in Evanston, Wyoming, pleaded guilty today in court for a misdemeanor possession charge. Christine Thatcher was charged with one count of a controlled substance, marijuana. The charges of marijuana possession stemmed from another city council member, David Welling, who said he received a complaint from an anonymous resident that said Thatcher had been at her residence and had attempted to smoke marijuana. The unnamed woman said that on May 31st, after some drinks, the woman asked Thatcher if she would like another drink, to which Thatcher allegedly replied, quote, "No, but I do want to get a buzz before leaving," then pulled out a small coin purse containing marijuana. The woman responded by asking Thatcher to please not smoke in her home, and when the councilwoman offered to go smoke outside, the woman told her she wasn't allowed to do that either because the neighbors have small children. The councilman who heard this story turned to a special investigator who interviewed Thatcher at her business. She told the criminal investigator that the woman's story was true. She also told him that she didn't believe smoking marijuana was a problem and that it should be legalized. She agreed to turn over any marijuana in her possession, and the agent and Thatcher went to her home where she gave him that coin purse that contained 2.1 grams of marijuana. As the agent searched her home, they found an additional jar that had 8.8 grams. Thatcher was arrested. She agreed to that plea deal today in court, and her sentence will be 360 days in jail, all suspended, but 1 year of probation with the stipulation she consumed no alcohol or controlled substances. She had to pay $150 to a crime victims fund, $40 in court costs, and she has to submit to a controlled substance evaluation and be subjected to random alcohol and drug testing. The judge acknowledged to the court that he was keenly aware of her city council position and the amount of controversy her arrest has had in the community. Uniti County Circuit Court Judge Michael Greer asked her to clarify her comments that she made to the agent that morning that marijuana should be legalized, to which she answered, quote, "When I made those comments to the police, I was in a state of shock at being betrayed by a friend, a person I considered a friend for 10 or 12 years. Greer replied that perhaps that friend was just trying to do her a favor. Thatcher then told the court that she would never use marijuana again. I have stopped using marijuana and I won't use it again, she told the court. Although prompted by many in the community, Thatcher says she will not step down for her city council post.
Wow, this story is lame on a lot of levels. First of all, you got a friend that you've known for over a decade. You feel comfortable being at their house, hanging out, you're drinking, and then you want to smoke a joint, right? I can see where if your friend is like a little, no, I'm not cool with that. Don't want you smoking my home. Really don't want you smoking outside because I don't want the neighbors to know that, you know, I got someone that's smoking pot here. Don't want any extra attention. But that's where that ends. That's where that ends. Come on, narking them off, snitching them out there like to the authorities there. Like, and this judge to say that she's doing her a favor, trying to help her out. Like her cannabis use is, oh my God, she's on the fast track to hell by smoking a little weed out of the coin purse after drinking all day. This is that double standard that just pisses me off so much about marijuana prohibition. To be looked down upon by alcohol drinkers, by wine drinkers, who are having their little social occasion, their little enjoyment of an an intoxication, a little bit of a buzz with friends. But when we want to pull something out that's safer for us, something that's far better for us, we get vilified for it. And now she has to, you know, she's got the risk to her career, the risk to her position as a city on the city council. She's got to deal with all this problem in the community. It's probably, you know, people are going to talk about this for years and years as if she's done something horrible. And then to be so frightened by this, to be so cowed by this, that she rejects what she had said earlier about marijuana should be legalized and, oh gosh, I'll never smoke pot again. Oh, that's so terrible. And it's hard to tell whether or not she's saying that, just saying that to survive, like so many of us have to, where we have to, you know, say things we really don't mean just so the political correctness doesn't, you know, take us down. But you don't know. You don't know if she's serious about that. You don't know if she's just saying that to save her own hide. There's just so many ways this is wrong, and I can't wait until we pass marijuana legalization. We roll this across the country, and our children and grandchildren can look back at stories like this as the silliness that they are, as the absurdity and the tragedy that they are, and wonder how their ancestors ever supported something as much an abomination as prohibition is.
The group Arkansas for Compassion Care has submitted over 65,000 signatures to try to put a medical marijuana law on the books. But like many other efforts, their validity rates on the signatures is shockingly low. Out of those 65,000 signatures turned in, only 36,495 were valid. That group needs 65,507 to qualify for a place on the ballot. They originally had just until July 6th to turn in the needed signatures, but the Secretary of State's office announced that he'll give them another 30 days to make up for all those invalid signatures. They will need an additional 6,012 verified signatures from Ohio voters by August 13th. The proposal seeks to set up a medical marijuana system in Arkansas that will allow nonprofit dispensaries and limited cultivation by patients and their caregivers if they live more than 5 miles from a dispensary. You would need a doctor's recommendation to use medical marijuana and register with the state. Melissa Fultz, the spokesperson for the group Arkansas for Compassionate Care, says that the volunteers are working across the state to meet that deadline. They're collecting signatures every day until the deadline, with a major petition event planned on July 28th in several coordinating locations across the state. The group website also lists several places that registered voters can go into to sign the petition. For more information, please visit their website, arcompassion.org, and I might suggest they get Paul Stanford to help them out.
Yeah, no kidding. As far as getting something on the ballot with spending the littlest amount of money and having just volunteer effort. Yeah, Paul would be the guy he's got the blueprint, apparently. We got it on the ballot here. They can do it in Arkansas. And it's just, you know, these people trying to get things on the ballot, there's so much that they have to go through, so many little tricks and hurdles and loopholes of the law they have to deal with. In some places, they have to get a certain percentage of signatures from every county in the state so that they don't just concentrate on a big city to get all of their petition gathering. In places like, I think it's in Ohio, where their signatures don't expire. They can collect and collect and collect until they finally get it on the ballot some year down the road. In other places like Oregon, you have to start over every election cycle getting a new amount of signatures. The amount of signatures can change based on how many people turned out to vote for governor or vote for president or something like that. There's just so much intricacy to this that, you know, we really got to thank and appreciate the people of Arkansas Compassion, arcompassion.org, for doing this hard work and fighting for liberty for the rest of us. It's not easy. It can be very complex, and there's so many hurdles to clear. It can really get you down. Keep up the good fight. You can pass legalization of medical marijuana in the South. I know it's possible.
Activists who would like to see veteran PTSD sufferers have access to medical marijuana got a firm snub from the White House this month. A petition on the White House website had been met with a sound rejection from the head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Gil Kerlikowske. Kerlikowske was answering the petition that asked the White House to, quote, allow United States disabled military veterans access to medical marijuana to treat their PTSD. The White House website was created during the current administration to give the American people an additional avenue to the government. They allow people to post petitions and ask the government for action, and when the petitions have at least 25,000 signatures, they respond to them. Now, the petition asking to allow veterans access to medical marijuana fell far short of that mark. It only had 8,258 signatures, but garnered the response anyway. Former Air Force Sergeant Mike Kravitz, who is the executive director for Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, launched a petition last year because he feels that veterans risk losing their medical coverage if they choose to use cannabis. Last October, after he launched the petition, he told the Military Times that for many vets, cannabis not only treats PTSD, but it's a lifesaver. Kerlikowske answered the petition saying that marijuana marijuana is not a benign drug, says that it does not meet the standards for effective or safe medicine. And he also told the petitioner that the White House administration maintains that marijuana use is associated with cognitive impairment, respiratory illnesses, and addiction, saying, quote, "We know from an array of treatment admission information and federal data that marijuana use is a significant source for voluntary drug treatment admissions and visits to emergency rooms." Krulikowski did add that the administration does support research on the phytochemicals in marijuana that might have medicinal value. But in support, I don't think he means monetarily, and he certainly doesn't mean encouraged. I'm not sure if he means allows, but there you have it. And whatever it means, our drugs or supports marijuana phytochemical research.
Yeah, sure he does.
5:30.
Whoa, wait a minute. That's not what's supposed to happen. That's what's supposed to happen. It's 20 after. We got to take a break.
It's 4:20 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our Russ. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, Gil Krulikowski and PTSD. I guess it's better that those soldiers have those night terrors and freak their families out and lead to higher divorce rates than possibly getting addicted to the reefer. Oh, dear. Right back with Electric Tuesday. Stick around. Oh, you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Five of the last seven major party candidates to run for president, three of the last seven vice presidential candidates, and the last three presidents have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. This is the Russ Belville Show. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, we're going out to the IOTA PromoNet once again for some of that great unreleased, unsigned music that they allow us to promote. This is from their dance music collection, a group called CI, S-E-E-I, called CI Remixed is the album. And the song we're going to play for you today is called Soul Hitman. So check this one out.
So your rock don't roll.
If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't roll.
If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't roll.
If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't roll.
In the motherland, Babylon, a wicked, them a wicked man. Smile in your face, take bread from your hand. World Bank come up with a takeover plan, but you still can't conquer child children. Swing down sweet chariots and come again. We blew up the Babylon, a wicked system. We blew up the Babylon, a wicked system. Wicked system. I don't care where you went to school at. I don't care what job that you got. Skull and a bone, we know in on a dock. We know John in a race, we know in a rat back. There was in the detail, the horns in the hat. Anything what you son, I must say Babylon tax. Tax on the sound, man, the tax on the track. Toes to your knees, I must say head to your back. Man, say head to your back.
Could you please tell me, what's your definition of soul?
My definition of soul is simple. I think soul is the essence of the human condition.
If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't lose. If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't lose. If it ain't got soul, so your rock don't lose.
Some coverage from the Starwood 32 Festival in Ohio. Listening to the Russ Belville Show. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
So your rock don't roll.
If you ain't got soul, so your rock don't roll.
Dear Mom, when I was in college, I used to drink a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now that I'm older, I prefer to use marijuana. It's less harmful to my body, I don't get hungover, and honestly, I feel safer around marijuana users. I hope this makes sense, but if not, let's talk. I love you.
That's right, baby. We're keeping the funk alive right here at Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, National Cannabis Radio's home of soul, funk, and disco. So join me, Big Daddy, every Tuesday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, at the Funky Roller Rink, where every night is Saturday night.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, we take you to my last week's trip to Starwood in Ohio.
30, and as a professional pothead, it behooves me to get things started on time, lest people give me any sort of negative stereotypes about our tendency to be on time. So, let me start. My name is Russ Belville, and I am the host of The Russ Belville Show, which is a weekday talk radio show on the internet on National Cannabis Radio. The cards are right there at the front of the stage if you want to know more about the station and how to get it. It's ncr420.com. But basically, for the past 5 years, it's been my job to think about, talk about, write about, research, and smoke marijuana. Okay, the smoke part's just my own personal choice. But the rest of it's true. It is my job. I'm literally a professional pothead. I analyze drug policy statistics. I interview people, doctors, lawyers, researchers on marijuana policies. So I may be one of the best informed people on marijuana on the planet. Who knows? But we'll test that. I've already done a couple of presentations here today. And first, I want to thank Starwood for having me out here. This is my first time not at Starwood. This is my first time in the state of Ohio. So thank you, Ohio. It's been very nice. I brought you some Portland weather. I hope you like it. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and in Portland, Oregon, I'm a medical marijuana card holder, which gives me the legal capability to carry 24 plants and 24 ounces. I can have 24 ounces of medical cannabis on me at any time. That's a pound and a half if you're more familiar with metric. So the purpose of today's talk, I've already done a couple talks. My first talk was on the Constitution and marijuana and how the war on drugs affects just about all of our constitutional rights. I did a speech earlier today on the drug war debate and some of the topics that are in the news now and how people are talking about the drug war itself. This last presentation I have for you is on the history of cannabis and hemp and marijuana in America. And really, you know how we think of the bald eagle as our national symbol? If we were to have a national plant, it would be cannabis. The very fiber of this country, the very heritage of our nation is built upon cannabis hemp, and without it, this country would never have survived. So what we'll do here in this talk, I'm going to take you all the way back to the very first European settlers that came to this land and how cannabis hemp was involved in that part of their history and culture, how it evolved through the 1700s and we got to the Revolutionary War. There's a lot of quotes out there that you'll hear from people from the Founding Fathers about hemp, and I'll tell you which ones are true and which ones are false. We'll move into the 1800s and the move westward, the Oregon Trail, and how hemp was vital in that. And then we'll get into the 1900s, Industrial Revolution, and the beginnings of the prohibition of cannabis, how it came about, why it persists to this day, and most currently, what's happening right now in changing these prohibitionary laws. So thank you for being here, and we'll just get started. And by the way, if you miss anything, I'm recording these for my show at RadicalRuss.com, so you can always look up later at RadicalRuss.com if you have more questions. All right, so to begin, we're going to take you all the way back, like I said, to the founding or the beginning of the settling of this nation by at least English settlers. Of course, the Vikings came over here in the 1000s or so. So I'm not going to go that far back. But the first permanent settlement on the American continent by the white European settlers was the Jamestown colony in 1609. 1609, very first permanent settlement. Of course, they had a very tough time in that first settlement. Half their people died in the first couple of years. They were nowhere near prepared for the elements that they would face in the cold New England climate. And of course, there are many stories of how the native populations helped them out through those times. And part of this is that the first wave of colonists that came over were at a severe lack for fuel. The two types of oil that were used to fuel lamps and lanterns at that time were whale oil and hemp seed oil. And whaling is very difficult and time intensive, and you have to have a lot of materiel to be able to pull that off. So these colonists came over with a limited supply of this whale oil, and 2 years in had pretty much run their supplies out. So part of what brought cannabis hemp to this continent was in 1611, the Jamestown colony was first, they planted their first rows of hemp, primarily as a seed oil crop, to be able to provide oil for the lanterns and to, you know, well, basically light what they were doing. But also the benefits of planting hemp on the colonies were more than just seed oil. Anyone who's studied the hemp plant will know that it is not only just an oil plant, but also a very vital food crop and a very vital fiber crop. One of the things about hemp is that it is the strongest plant fiber we have, the strongest natural plant fiber we have. And part of how they determine the strength on these plant fibers has to do with the length of them. For example, if you've got a Douglas fir tree, and you're going to take a plank of Douglas fir wood and get down to the fiber level in it, where it's all these individual plant fibers that make up a piece of wood, you'd find that the fibers are between like an inch to an inch and a half long of these individual fibers within the wood. Hemp stalk fiber is as long as the stalk. It's a single continuous fiber, and many of them that run together. So with hemp, we can actually produce press boards and other type of lumber and building materials that are as strong as steel, but as light as wood, and as malleable and as usable as wood. And this is part of also why the colonists had to have that in 1611, is they needed something to build houses with, other than just chopping down timber all. And hemp was so useful in so many other ways, especially the fiber uses of hemp, to be able to create cloth out of it, cloth that's highly resistant to rot, highly resistant to water permeability. And again, hemp is also a kind of a crop that can grow just about anywhere in just about any climate. Hemp has been used by cultures throughout human history, everywhere south of the Arctic Circle. It won't grow up in the Inuit northern territories type areas, but everywhere south, every culture has used it in some way. So when our drug warrior friends like to say, well, there's this culture around alcohol that's been around with us forever, but we don't have a culture around marijuana, I always say, well, our culture around marijuana goes to 1611. That's, you know, 401 years. How much more culture do you need? It's our heritage. Our very country was founded on this. So as the 1600s evolve and we get more colonies being developed and formed in the East Coast, hemp becomes a trading commodity. It becomes a commodity that is traded not only amongst the colonists themselves, but also with the Native Americans that they were working with at the time. Hemp actually becomes a form of currency. In the American colonies, as we start getting into the 1700s, it became mandated in some colonies, Virginia was one of them, where it was mandated that they had to grow hemp. There wasn't enough of it, and they were mandating that the colonists grow more hemp. And this became a way of paying taxes. You could pay your colonial taxes with a bounty of hemp crops. So in our early foundings, before we were actually a nation, while we were still colonies, hemp was so vital to this nation. It was woven into the very fabric of everything we did. It was our taxation, it was our money, it was our food, it was our fiber, it was our fuel source. The one thing they didn't really use a lot of it for back then, though, was the medicinal aspect. It actually wasn't very well known as a medicinal crop. And part of the reason for that is industrial hemp and medical marijuana or cannabis that you'd smoke recreationally, while they are the same species of plant, they are developed in very different ways. Kind of like a Great Dane and a Chihuahua are the same species, they're still dogs, but they're incredibly different because of long years of breeding, long ways that we've selected certain characteristics. When we've bred hemp, we have selected it for its characteristics of being tall and reedy and strong, and as such, we've bred out the THC, the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive part of pot. When people talk about getting high on pot, it's the THC they're mostly referring to. So these hemp plants that were growing in the colonies, it wasn't something that you'd pick a bud off of and put in a pipe and smoke. It'd just give you a headache. It wasn't engineered that way. It wasn't that type of cannabis. The type of cannabis that people knew of as a smoking or a psychoactive material was hashish. This is where they would take hemp plants and concentrate, get the concentrated THCs and oils from them to produce a more smokable form of marijuana. So back in the colonial days, smoking pot wasn't a thing. You wouldn't take a bud and smoke it. You might take many hemp plants and reduce them to hash and smoke that. But that was a luxury that, you know, wasn't really available in the colonial times. Now, as we get into the 1700s, we start to get into where the colonies have been founded, and there's the early rumblings of revolution. The early colonists are starting to talk about, you know, taxation without representation and all the things that the crown was doing to the colonies to usurp their independence and so forth. And so the early colonists, 1740 through about 1770, the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, were hemp was part of, there was a company at the time called the British East India's Trading Company. And we all know them from the Boston Tea Party. They were the one, that's who we were rebelling against, was the British East India's Corporation. A lot of what's not known about American colonial history is, like, these days we talk about the corporations. Ooh, the man, the corporations. It was as much a problem then as it is now. The British East India's Corporation was more of a thumb on the colonists than was Britain itself. It was more a corporate thing. It was more the corporations wanting to get their taxes out of these colonies, and like corporations are what to do, you know, pillage the land, use the people, make profit, right? So a lot of that 1740s to 1770s revolutionary spirit had to do with a revolution against a corporate power. And one of the things that the British East India Corporation did not like was the colonial growing of hemp. They were not too fond of that because they had other sources elsewhere that they would use their trade with. And as the colonists were growing more hemp, the British East India Company had less leverage to force them to trade their pelts and their everything else that they were getting, mining and timber and so forth, to trade for the hemp they needed. As colonists were growing more hemp, that became less and less of a need. And this was part of why the British East India Corporation was raising taxes on tea and some of the other things that eventually led to the revolution. So it would be a stretch to say hemp led to the American Revolution, but it certainly had a large part of it because of the economic aspects of it and the need for the, again, this corporate power to have control over these natural resources. One of the things about hemp that makes it different than a lot of other natural resources is far less intensive to have to grow it. You know, they say it grows like a weed, right? Well, it's weed. And when you're growing hemp weed, it really is like a weed. Not like consumer cannabis, where you have to really, you know, tend it and make sure there's no males and do all the proper stuff to get good bud. With hemp, you know, plant some rows and it pretty much grows. So as an economic source, it brings economic power closer to the people. Like any old farmer can go and grow hemp and have a valuable crop. When we're talking about other types of crops, you have to have more labor, slave labor at the time it was, of course, and then now it's mechanical labor. You have to have more investment, you have to have pesticides, you have to have irrigation, you have to, all these other crops involve bigger corporate entities to keep them going. Hemp is the kind of a crop that can be at a very subsistence level. So if you're of the notion of trying to make the world a corporate place, hemp is not in your best interest because it brings things back to the people. All right, so when we get through the colonial times, we start to get to the revolutionary times. And of course, where hemp becomes so important in revolutionary times is that it was the fabric we used for the rigging and the sails and the rope and everything that was on our colonial navy, of course. And this is why hemp is such an important crop worldwide. It has a lot to do with navy back in the seafaring times. The power of your navy was the power of your country. That's how we measured how much power you had back in the 1600s, 1700s, and so on. All the sailing ships had to run on hemp sails, hemp cloth, hemp rope. And the reason why is you make a sail out of anything else, and it'll rot in the seawater. The seawater is very bad for cotton, or linen, or flax, or jute, or sisal, or any of these other fibers. Hemp, above any other, stands up to the rigors of seafaring. So being able to have your own colonial crop of hemp was not just an economic threat to the British East India Company, but it was a naval maritime threat. It made it's like, oh my God, they have all these trees, they can build all these ships and rig them up with hemp, we're in trouble. And that's another part, if you've ever heard of the American ship Old Ironsides. Old Ironsides, all hemp rigging on, all hemp sails. So the control of the hemp crop in the American colonies also became a issue of wartime, you know, when they were worried about going to war against the American colonies. Now, there's a lot of evidence of our presidents on this issue, on the issue of hemp. And one of the things I get asked when I do these kind of presentations on history, especially when I'm talking to college kids, is, hey, man, did George Washington smoke pot? George Washington get high, man? Because they all saw Dazed and Confused when Slater said, yeah, Martha Washington was a hit rod, man. But really, like I said earlier, the evidence of them smoking flowers, you know, pot flowers, cannabis buds, is pretty scant. But let me give you some of the quotes that we do have, because this kind of illustrates what we know of the early founding fathers and their appreciation for hemp. George Washington, in his diaries, had written, make the most of the Indian hemp seed and sow it everywhere. So Washington, father of the country, general of the American Revolution, was writing that in part so that we would have the materiel to go up against the British. We would be able to fight it. And as far as whether or not they knew about it as a psychoactive thing, there are two Washington quotes that are brought up that are kind of wafflers as far as do they really prove anything. If you want to think that they smoked pot, then you'll say, oh yeah, that proves it. And if you think they didn't smoke pot, you'll say, oh yeah, that proves it. But I'll give them to you. There's one article in George Washington's diaries when he's talking about his hemp farm where he writes, began to separate the male from the female hemp plants. Well, there's two reasons you'd separate males and females. One, to get males for seed crop. Two, to get females for smoking or for medicinal purposes. So was he trying to get more seed crop? Or was he trying to get smoking material? Or was he trying to do both? Could have been both. To try to follow this up, some researchers actually went to the Washington archives and museums. There are a number of clay pipes that George Washington was known to have smoked out of. And they've done DNA testing to find it with his saliva on them, but they will not let us test them to find out whether or not they had cannabis hemp in them. The Washington, whoever runs the Washington estate, whatever it is, won't let us test them. Like, what, we'll find out that he smoked pot. How terrible would that be?
Or that he didn't.
How terrible would that be? Yeah. But when it comes to intoxication in the early American colonies, it wasn't about pot. It was about cider. It was about beer and ale. The founding fathers were drunks. Let me just say it. I said it. The founding fathers were drunks. There is a bar tab, a historical bar tab in Philadelphia from the day before the signing of the Declaration of Independence, where most of the signers were there. It is a $3,000 bar tab.
Jesus.
In 1776 dollars. And isn't it four flagons of this, three casks of that? You know, they were drinkers. They really, really drank. And John Adams, our second president, actually had his White House staff would have a flagon of ale waiting for him in the morning on his bedside. That was the order, is that when he woke up, there had to be a flagon of ale there for him to drink. Now, I'm a wake and baker, but that's wake and chug, man. I don't know about that. So, yeah, the alcohol, drinking, and intoxication was well known and celebrated. I mean, the per capita alcohol consumption of Americans in the 1700s and 1800s is twice what it is today. They drank twice as much as we do. And we have Super Bowl ads, right? They're drinking like crazy. And this goes into another presentation I did earlier. I did this yesterday where I talk about how, you know, in our rights, we have a Ninth Amendment that says that just because we put a bunch of rights in the Constitution doesn't mean we don't have other rights. You know, yeah, you have the right to free speech, you have the right to religion, but just because we made this list, that's not the whole list. You got a whole bunch of other rights out there. And I always point to this alcoholism and this drinking of the founding fathers to say, these guys had to have thought we had a right to intoxication. They wrote, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, while they were drunk on a $3,000 bar tab. Come on, I think I know what their pursuit of happiness might have included. But John Adams, the second president, he wrote, we shall by and by want a world of hemp more for our consumption. So again, it's following up on that Washington thing, is we need hemp to keep our country free, or else, you know, we won't be able to rig our sails, we won't be able to light our lamps and so forth. Where there comes some controversy in these first few presidents is Thomas Jefferson. Now, Jefferson was an interesting fellow when you read about him. He was kind of, I think today we would call him ADD. I think we'd call him attention hyperactivity disorder or whatever that is. But very interesting guy. He was an ambassador to France. During that time, the time he was there in France, hashish use was in vogue. So there are some scholars who think that Jefferson may have used hash back then. We can't find any direct proof of it, though, and it's really sad because Jefferson is probably one of the most studied founding father and the most prolific. He wrote the most stuff. So there is one quote we have from him where he said, "Hemp is of first necessity to the wealth and protection of the country." And that, again, was from a military aspect. It's necessary for our protection. But there's a quote that's out there now, and people have been spreading this around. I saw it first on a DVD of a movie called Totally Baked. But I've seen it in other places, and you know how the internet is. Once someone sees a quote on the internet, they think it's true because, by God, it's on the internet. And they start copying and pasting it everywhere. And now this quote has taken a life of its own. I don't know if you've heard it. Here's the quote. "Some of my finest hours have been spent sitting on my back veranda, smoking hemp and observing as far as my eye can see." That's a lovely quote, but it's absolutely false. There is absolutely no record of him having said the so-called veranda quote. We searched Thomas Jefferson's archives, Monticello.org. I called one of his major biographers, Tom Hartman, Lipscomb Berg edition. It cannot be found, this veranda quote. So if you hear the veranda quote, totally false. Now, moving into some of the other founding fathers, though, the next four or five presidents give us really good evidence that they were using marijuana as a psychoactive ingredient. They were using it to change or alter their perceptions. The first president that gives us evidence of that is James Madison. James Madison claimed that hemp gave him insight on starting the Democratic nation. And when they say hemp gave him insight, scholars are often pointing that out as being a hint that he was smoking it. Because hemp giving you insight, hemp as a crop doesn't give you much insight. As a plant or as a sail or as a rope, doesn't give you a whole lot of insight. Insight would be something, you know, when you're changing your mind. It's not a definitive proof, but it's the first founding father where we see something that says, okay, maybe these guys knew a little bit about the herbal aspect of it. James Monroe, the author of the Monroe Doctrine, openly smoked hash as ambassador to France. Fifth president, James Monroe, is the first president I can say without a doubt guaranteed smoked pot. It wasn't pot, it was hash, but you know, the same idea. He was using cannabis for its psychoactive purposes. And then when we get into the later 1800s, of course, we get the westward expansion. We get the Louisiana Purchase of 1803. Everybody starts moving west. We have more conflict with the Native Americans out there. And the whole slavery conflict as well, free state versus slave state, Kansas Rebellion, Nebraska, all that. And part of this also was the Mexican-American War, the fight for Texas, whether Texas would be slave or free. And three presidents who served in those various wars throughout the Southwest, Andrew Jackson, Zachary Taylor, and Franklin Pierce, all smoked marijuana with their troops. This is something that got brought up from Mexico. As we were fighting the Mexican troops, they were using marijuana, that was their word. Marijuana, by the way, interesting note, isn't really a Spanish word. It's kind of one of those coined words, and it has to do with the meaning of very nice is kind of what the two words mean when they're put together. But anyway, that's what the Mexicans called it at the time, was marijuana. And then Taylor, Pierce, Jackson, all known to have smoked it with his troops. Cannabis use in the Mexican-American War by American soldiers was twice as popular as cannabis use by American soldiers in the Vietnam War. And we think Vietnam, we think, okay, that's the war where they were smoking pot. You ever seen that one shot where they have the soldiers in Vietnam using the shotgun?
A little shotgun blow?
So that's the image I always think of Vietnam, is they have an unloaded shotgun, and the one soldier smokes,
and he blows through the shotgun,
and the guy on the other end sucks the smoke out of the end of the shotgun. But yeah, twice as popular in the Mexican-American War, cannabis smoking with our troops, as it was in Vietnam. Franklin Pierce, when he wrote back to his family, wrote that it was the only good thing about the war. Smoking marijuana, only good thing about the war. Now, as far as the as far as hemp continued throughout the 1800s, hemp was really more of a crop that was of issue in the north. The south, of course, is all around cotton and the whole abysmal slavery that was around getting that cotton produced. Hemp in the north was also a crop that required a lot of attention at the time. The hardest part of harvesting hemp was the threshing of it. It had to be beat over these wooden kind of paddocks. You have to beat it to try to soften the fibers so they could rend them from one to the other. This was also very labor intensive. And so with the South using all of its ill-gotten slave labor to produce cotton, and the North was having to pay subsistence farmers, basically, to produce the hemp, it made it so that hemp couldn't really compete with cotton. Now, all other things being equal, if we had to pay people to pick cotton, then hemp would have kicked its butt, right? But the dynamic of slavery being involved in this artificially made cotton much cheaper than it really is to produce. And that's why kind of we're stuck, that's why I got cotton jeans on right now. That's why you got cotton jeans on right now. Partially is because at the time where hemp could have really taken off in this country, it was handicapped by cotton being so subsidized in its labor production. So it's as if I needed another reason to hate slavery as it was, there is another reason, is it retarded the growth of the natural American hemp heritage that would have continued had we not been a slave-based society. Now, speaking of slave-based society, that takes us to the Civil War. And we get to the Civil War, we've got the North and the South fighting, and Abraham Lincoln, of course, President of the United States at the time. And this leads us to where we get two more quotes about prohibition, and I see these all the time, and they're both false. Lincoln does not have a single attributable, accurate quote about prohibition. But here's the two that everyone always says. First one is, "Two of my favorite things are sitting on my front porch, smoking a sweet pipe of hemp and playing my Hohner harmonica." Now, the problem with that is that's attributed to a letter that was written in 1855. Hohner, the German company, did not make harmonicas until 1857. And they didn't export them to America until 1868, 4 years after Lincoln was shot at the Ford Theater. So if Lincoln was sitting on his front porch smoking hemp and playing his Hohner harmonica, he was doing it in a time machine because it was not possible. They didn't have those harmonicas. And yet, I've told this to people time and again, and I still see that quote. The other quote, this is a little more pernicious because it was purposefully a hoax. And it's this quote: "Prohibition goes beyond the bound of reason in that it attempts to control the man's appetite by legislation and makes a crime out of things that are not crimes. A prohibition law strikes a blow at the very principles upon which our government was founded." That's a gorgeous quote. I love it. I wish it were true.
And it, well, actually, the words are true.
The words are true. And let me bring this up. This is from the American Spectator. This is a screen grab of a newspaper clipping from 1922. And it explains how this is a hoax. It says, "Authorship of anti-prohibition screed credited to Lincoln is admitted by Georgia wet leader." Now, we'll get into this history in a little bit, but the wets were the ones that didn't want alcohol prohibition, and the dries were the ones that did want alcohol prohibition. And in 1822, the former mayor of Atlanta faked this quote by Lincoln to try to win the black vote against prohibition. Yeah. Talk about this is Fox News, 1922.
All right, that's all the time I got for that part of the video. We just had to make sure I got the Lincoln quotes in there. Thanks for joining us for hour one of the Russ Belville Show. Stick around for hour two. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. Hanging out with Wiz Khalifa, Ganja John, and Cannabis Carry. We got some more stories coming up in hour two. Another dog shooting story we have to break. We've got news from the Rand Corporation. And, again, your calls and conversation. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.